Hi, everybody. This is Andy Marquette. I am joined by my colleague and friend, Lees MacTagg. We are Let's Geek Out, where we talk about geekly, bi-weekly things. You know, every 2 weeks we do something that's fangirl related. And this week we've got a movie lined up to talk about. But also, Lees, how is it going in this new dystopia in which we are dwelling?
Oh, you know, I mean, it's fantastic for my generalized anxiety disorder.
Jesus.
That is, it's great. So let's see. No social media for a few hours before bed. I can't check the news too frequently. And
good.
My wife and I went to the library this weekend and checked out 40 books before they closed the libraries down on Monday.
Yay.
So we're set.
We're set for this new, the brave new world in which we're going to be living. Same. We're all working from home now, which is fine by me because I actually already work from home. And it's, you know, it's not a problem for me, but there's a lot of my colleagues who are freaking out right now and like, oh my God, how am I going to do this? I'm glad you brought up anxiety because I know there's a lot of people out there who are, you know, they have set routines that help them cope.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a huge diversion from those set routines. So if you have somebody in your life who is experiencing this, maybe reach out and try to help them set some new routines so that they can get back into the groove of having those routines that help them, you know, get through things like this.
Yeah.
Everybody make new routines because we don't know how long we're going to have to be doing this. And I have a feeling right. It's going to be a minute. So,
well, I mean, I'm commuting up the stairs to work right now. So my 15 minute commute is now like 10 seconds, but I'm still getting up in the morning and showering and getting dressed just so I can like get myself in that work mm-hmm. mindset.
That's good.
It helps me.
Good things to do. All right. So everybody also check in with your neighbors, especially if they're immunocompromised or elderly and we're not able to get to the stores. Maybe you can help them get some supplies that they might need. I know a lot of folks live in neighborhoods that have that next door platform.
Mm-hmm. So, for better or worse.
Yeah, for better or worse. This might be for better because you can post on there, you know, how's so-and-so doing? I have extra whatever. And then you can get the word out that way and just check in and leave stuff on people's porches if you don't want to, you know, compromise them. Just, you know, friends, this is a good time to pull together and demonstrate that, you know, this is who we are as people. So take care of each other and be safe. And listen to us talk about movies. So then maybe you'll have something to watch, right, as you're going through the quarantine or the social isolation, social distancing.
Social distancing, yes.
Mm-hmm. For some of us, it is isolation, but, you know, whatever.
Well, it's kind of fun, though. I mean, our movie is sort of topical. It is an apocalyptic story.
This is true. All right, I'm going to introduce our movie that this week, y'all, Lees and I rewatched. I don't know about you, Lees, but this is like a rewatch of like the umpteenth time for me of mm-hmm. the original Terminator, 1984. And one of the things that I wanted to... You know, I was telling Lees earlier that, yeah, I've seen this movie so many times. It is one of my favorites, but I watched it differently this time. I watched it looking for specific things that I look for now in my pop culture. And I came away with a lot of really interesting things that I had not picked up in all the times I've been watching this film. So, Lees, I'm going to turn it over to you and, you know, give us the as you said, the very brief overview of the very simple story that is Terminator.
Yeah. I mean, at the heart of this, the Terminator, which is what this movie is called, is a very simple story. There's, you know, a lot goes on screen, but at its heart, the story is really, there's not a whole lot to it. So, what happens, we open with a naked man appearing out of nowhere.
Yeah, it happens all the time.
In LA. Then he holds up a bunch of hoods and takes their clothing. And that is just sort of that first step on this journey. So what's going on is in the distant future of the year 2029.
You gotta understand, this was 1984, friends. Mm-hmm. So that was the distant future then.
So robots have basically taken over the world and have done their best to wipe out humanity. And humanity's last sort of remnants have sent back through time someone to keep the mother of a key figure in this human resistance alive from the robots that, or the robot that has been sent back to kill her so that this key figure will never be born.
Mm-hmm.
And that's it. That's the story.
That's the story that's, right there.
Yeah. I mean, everything else that happens is just details.
Mm-hmm. So we've got, like, you know, you get, as Lisa and I were saying, they're not really flashbacks. They're flash forwards of this really horrific destruction that has been undergone in the world. Like, and you see like these machines rolling over these grim landscapes of human skulls. And you see resistance fighters hiding behind blasted buildings and shooting at some of the machines. And so you've got like this war that's going on in the future. And then the Terminator, the cyborg, comes back through to 1984 LA to take out Sarah Connor, who is the mother of John Connor, the father of the Resistance. And the Resistance sends Kyle Reese back to watch out for her. He's a soldier in the future. And they send him back to find Sarah and to make sure that she's safe, to keep her safe from this Terminator and possibly destroy the cyborg if they can along the way. So it's a cat and mouse game, and it's a constant, like, it starts a little bit slow because you're wondering who is this big goon who just showed up and is now, you know, stomping around through LA. And then when the pace picks up, it just does not stop. It's like, no. It's like you are dragged into this a really intense cat and mouse game with Kyle and Sarah running from the Terminator.
Mm-hmm. Who is, for all intents and purposes, unstoppable. And, you know, I mean, he tears through pretty much everything in his way. And not only is he just this phenomenal force of destruction, but he's also skilled at infiltration, which means that they can't really trust anyone because they don't know if he's on the other end of the line, because he can mimic voices really well.
Mm-hmm.
They don't know, you know, where he's getting his information from. Yeah, and you're right. It does start out kind of slowly, but the unease builds pretty quickly. And I think, you know, one of the smartest ways they do that is, so the Terminator is using a phone book to track down Sarah Connor.
It's 1984, friends. This is how we did it.
Mm-hmm. I know. My wife turned to me and she went, "How does he know about phone books?" And I was like, because the people in 1984 had no idea that in 2020, this is how things would be.
Cyberdyne Systems. That's how. Skynet.
Mm-hmm. But he has a phone book. And so there are three Sarah Connors in the phone book. And our Sarah Connor is number three.
Thank God.
Right. Otherwise, it would have been a very short movie. But so our Sarah, our main character, is starting to get this feeling of unease as it's kind of trickling back to her that, oh, wow, that's weird. This woman named Sarah Connor just got killed. And then later she finds out that another woman named Sarah Connor also got killed. And by this point, like, the cops are trying to get a hold of her. But now she's about to get launched right into the middle of things.
And that's what, one of the things that, you know, as I was watching this movie from a different perspective, one of the things that you notice in this movie is that Sarah Connor is the focus of this movie.
And very much so.
The guys, okay, you've got Arnold Schwarzenegger as the Terminator, and he's kind of like this force, this, you know, scariness out there, but he's not actually directly interacting all that much with Sarah. You know, he's not like talking to her. He just wants to kill her. Okay. He's a machine. That's what he does. And then we've got Kyle Reese, the soldier, and he ends up, you know, he really feels a bond with Sarah through her son because he was fighting with John Connor, and he feels a bond with her. And he's like, you taught John Connor all of these things. And the irony is that Sarah's actually learning some of these things from Kyle, you know, when they start, when they make mm-hmm. those pipe bombs, for example, that in the penultimate scenes. So we watch Sarah go from kind of this, she's a waitress at this really shitty restaurant. And we watch her character evolve into a fairly formidable badass when she realizes that Kyle is not crazy, that mm-hmm. there really is somebody out there trying to kill her. She kind of like is like, well, shit, I don't want to die, so I'm going to hang with this guy. And she falls into the role pretty quickly after it becomes apparent that he's telling the truth about everything. And I think one of the scenes that really brought that home for her, and we were just talking about this, Lise, if you want to talk about it, was when Schwarzenegger, the Terminator, shows up at the police station. Mm-hmm. And what happens?
Oh, wow. I mean, he makes mincemeat out of everybody. And this is the place where she's supposed to be safe, right? I mean, she's in a building with like 30 cops. She should be, if she's not safe here, she's not safe anywhere. Mm-hmm. And it becomes really obvious really quickly that she is not safe there, because the cops just, they can't do anything against this sort of, this machine who is just methodically mowing through them.
And that's literally what happens. He's the Terminator, for those of you who are unfamiliar with the whole premise of the cyborg that comes back. He's some metal skeleton, but over that is flesh. You know, he's mm-hmm. a cyborg. So he presents as human. And that makes that's why they're so good at infiltration. And so when you shoot him, it doesn't really do anything to him. I mean, he'll go and dig out the bullets later, but it doesn't hurt him. He feels no pain. And the system, the skeleton underneath his skin it's like impermeable. It's, you know. And you made a really interesting comment, Lise, about this is a mass shooter incident. That's really what that scene is. And in 1984, there's a very different context for mass shootings.
Right. In 1984, this would have been something that was shocking, because it would be something that you just, you couldn't really conceive of in that way. Like there's a scene where Sarah ducks into a seedy nightclub to get away from this dude who's following her, who turns out to be the guy who's trying to save her ass.
Yeah, but she doesn't know. She's like,
but she doesn't know that. No. And the cyborg, the Terminator, you know, finds out that she's there and tracks her there and shoots up the club trying to kill her. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And that's one of those things where it's like, you know, now our context is completely different with the number of mass shootings that have been just all over the place and the Pulse nightclub massacre. I mean, that's something that feels sort of very close to home in a way that I don't think it would have for 1984 audiences.
No, in 1984, it was horrifying. It was absolutely horrifying to see this one guy go into a police station and just like kill what, at least 20 officers at least. Mm-hmm. And then to go to this nightclub and, you know, just start shooting people. Just, I mean, it was a really different context for scenes like that. And it made them all the more horrifying. So in this movie in 1984, and you and I talked a little bit about this, some of the things that I picked up on were like how freaking dirty LA was.
Oh, yeah. There's trash everywhere. And I'm looking at that. And I mean, I was six in 1984. So, yeah, I was alive then, but I do not remember it being that trashed. But there was garbage everywhere in a way that we just don't see now.
No, we don't. We don't see stuff like that. And if you watch movies from the 80s and the 70s, they're really gritty and they're very dark and they're really raw. And people say whatever the hell. There's overt racism in a lot of movies. You'll hear slurs in these movies that you probably will not hear in this day and age. And I find that really, really interesting. It's an interesting commentary on who we are as a culture and as an and what pop culture, how that's evolved. So that was one of the things that I noticed about LA was how freaking trashed it was. You know, it was like, oh yeah, I was there. I went to LA in the 80s and 90s and it was pretty gross. It was like that. And when she's in that club, you know, she ducks into the club. And one of the things, if you notice, there's the scene in the club after it's been like all shot up and everything's all fucked up. And there's Schwarzenegger standing in silhouette in front of the club's name, which is in big neon letters. And the club's name is Tech Noir, but he's standing in such a way that it could be Terminator. And I wondered if that was done on purpose as sort of an Easter egg kind of thing. I don't know. But I was like, oh my God, I've missed that in all the times I've watched this movie. I never picked up on that. So it's just kind of a weird little meta thing that I noticed watching it. The other thing that is for some of you who are really big into watching, you know, actors as they go through their different careers, I wanted to bring this up because Terminator, this 1984's Terminator, was produced by Gale Ann Hurd. And back in the day, you didn't expect to see women involved in positions like that. And if you watch the credits for Terminator, you will see a lot of female names in the cast and in the crew, especially in the crew. And I found that really, really interesting. Hurd at the time, I think this was the year before she married James Cameron, who directed Terminator. And then she went on to produce Aliens, the second, that is one of my fave movies, in 1986. And some of the actors in sort of bit parts in Terminator end up in larger parts in Aliens. One of those is Bill Paxton. He was the leader of the punk gang that, you know, Schwarzenegger.
Oh, I know he looked familiar.
Yeah. I should say the late Bill Paxton. He died a few years ago. Complications from surgery. Michael Bann, who played Kyle Reese. He plays Sigourney Weaver's sidekick in Aliens. Lance Henriksen, who plays, you know, that goofy detective who has all these really weird stories that he's trying to tell and his superior keeps cutting him off. He played Bishop, the android in Aliens. So Hurd and Cameron took some of those folks with them into the Aliens first. And I thought that was kind of a cool continuity there to see Bill Paxton as this random punk guy. And then he becomes Hudson in Aliens. So anyway, just like some more little Easter eggs that I was noticing in Terminator. Let's talk about, in the 80s, this was the era of Reagan, and Terminator really resonated with a lot of people. And I would say culturally, it's because there was a huge nuclear war fear that was circulating during the 80s. I think this movie sort of like tapped into that.
I think it taps into that. And it also taps into a distrust for people in power.
Oh, good. Yeah. Talk more about that.
Well, so we eventually find out that the war between the humans and the robots comes about because of an AI for a Department of Defense system, Skynet, decides that, you know what? It doesn't make sense to have these wars. We'll just kill off the humans.
Yeah, I know, right?
And so, to me, it feels a lot like there's just sort of this opacity in power where we don't really know what's going on, and that gets transferred so easily to this sort of faceless computer system that can then do what it wants because it has no oversight.
And the irony is that
sounds a lot like the 1980s under Reagan.
Yeah, that's true. And the irony there is that humans created Skynet.
Yep.
You know, and then there's a discussion about that. Kyle educates Sarah about what causes the war. And I mean, it's like a nuclear devastation. That's one of the themes of how, when you look at the horrific apocalypse, the post-apocalypse in the flash forwards, that's where we got to that, was that Skynet, the machines, basically rose up and caused this devastation to get rid of humans. And now they're on their mission, their singular mission is to get rid of the surviving humans. And I always wondered, like, then what are they going to do? Like, I mean, okay, so there's no more humans. So what are you going to do, Skynet? I mean, what's going to happen
Robot
now?
Utopia? I mean, yeah.
I always wondered that, you know, because you always see these ragtag groups of survivors that are fighting the machines. So that gives the machines a reason to continue trying to wipe them out. But then I was thinking, what happens if you actually win and there are no more humans?
Right. Then what? But I mean, but that's the pitfall that you fall into when your villain is just evil.
True.
Right?
True.
I mean, I feel like we don't see as much of that now because we're more interested in sort of those gray areas. And there's a realization that generally people who do bad things don't see themselves as evil. There's
right.
a justification, a rationalization that they have to put themselves through. But with a machine like this, it's just bad. It just wants to kill all humans. And there's no sort of discussion as to why. And, I mean, for one thing, this movie doesn't need that.
No, it doesn't.
I mean, the story is very simple. This is being reported back to us from a man who grew up inside this conflict. He doesn't know anything about Skynet's background except that it caused this war. So, mm-hmm. you know, he can't really speculate on that. But I do feel that that is a place where, like, the big bad as a concept falls apart at some point because mm-hmm. what's behind this need to be evil? And if there's nothing compelling behind there, yeah, you get questions like, okay, so what are you gonna do when after you kill all humans?
Yeah, exactly. But there's enough humans that survive that there's, like, you know, 3 or 4 more movies made.
So, exactly.
So clearly, you know, we did a good job of surviving the apocalypses. Whatever.
I like apocalypses.
Anyway, so
it's like apocalypse dot dot dot
dot dot dot dot. And during that era, you know, a lot of people when they watch these movies, and I'll be specific, younger people when they watch older movies like this, I don't think that a lot of them really grasp the context in which these movies were made.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's a really important thing to think about is, you know, there was a lot of angst during the Reagan era over war and nuclear war and people freaking out about that. So apocalypse was kind of something that was on people's minds. And Terminator tapped into that. And it tapped into people's fears about security. Going back to the scene at the police station. Like, you were supposed to, especially if you were white, you were supposed to feel safe at police stations. And this one dude shows up and totally erases that sense of safety and security for, especially for Sarah, who was in the station when that was happening. And she was hiding under a desk knowing that, oh my God, Kyle's right. This dude is going to show up and try to kill me. So people, if you haven't seen this movie, or if you're younger people and you're going to watch this movie, yeah, some of these special effects are cheesy, but for the time, some were actually really good. If the future world, I thought those effects mm-hmm. were done really well.
Yeah. Yeah. A lot of those hold up pretty well. And that's all practical effects.
Mm-hmm. And,
you know, I mean, we don't have CGI at this point yet.
Right. And the other thing to think about is when you're watching movies like this, one of the things that I always find really interesting, and I'll, you know, when I'm watching movies like from the 60s, 50s, and earlier, I'll be thinking about how people communicate. Like, here's the Terminator, and he goes to a public phone booth. Remember when those were a thing? And they mm-hmm. all had phone books. Every single one of them had a phone book, and you could look up somebody's number and call them on the phone. And
get their address.
And get their address. They were listed, friends. 1984, your address was listed in this phone book with your name and your number.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and a lot of the movie relies on answering machines. Mm-hmm. And the fact that you played them back out loud off a tape, you
exactly.
know?
Yeah.
Without these answering machines, the Terminator isn't able to track Sarah down to half the places he manages to find her.
Yeah, that's true, because he goes to her apartment and he sadly, you know, her roommate, he thinks she's Sarah. And then Sarah calls from Technoir and says, you know, pick up, it's Sarah, I'm down at what, blah, blah, blah. You know, and she actually gives the name of the bar. So the material culture of this movie is kind of a character and part of the setting, which helps drive mm-hmm. the story. And when I think about this, Lise, when I'm writing in certain, you know, depending on what I'm writing, I think about what culture, what technology do they have to communicate? And right. how would that work? And oftentimes it helps drive the story. Like now in a lot of romances or a lot of books, you'll see characters texting messages mm-hmm. to each other. That was not something that you would see 10, 20 years ago. Now it's ubiquitous.
Right. So, yeah. And 5 years ago, we were trying to figure out how it's the best way to depict this on the page.
Yeah, exactly. You know, so if you read books like that were written, like thrillers that were written in the 80s, I always find it interesting to see what the writers do in terms of that technology that was available and the material culture, and also just the general, the ethos of the era. The 80s were a very different era mm-hmm. than what we're in now. And, you know, we were talking about this earlier, that it was gritty and dirty and
fraught.
It was fraught. And yeah, and that's things like that are, it's very different now than it was. So watching the movie and watching it from a different perspective, like, okay, I'm going to watch this movie as someone who's going to be looking at how women are portrayed in pop culture. And this movie, you know, and I'm sure that was because of Gail Ann Hurd's work on this movie, was you didn't get a lot of sexist comments to Sarah.
No.
I mean, you got the asshole in the restaurant when she was waiting tables. And his asshole kid, but that could happen now, you know, in a restaurant. Right. But you didn't get, and there was a fuck ton of overt sexist comments throughout the 80s and the 90s and the 70s. And you didn't get that in this movie. And Sarah was very much the primary driver of this story. Everything revolved around her because she's the target, but she was also had a lot of agency. Mm-hmm. You know, she wasn't one of these women who's going to fall down as she's running away and, you know, her shoe flies off or whatever. You saw her go through all these emotions, people dying and she's targeted. But rather than freaking out about it, she steps up and starts trying to be present in her own agency to escape with Kyle's help.
Right. I mean, by the end, she's the one who's pulling Kyle along and keeping him from falling apart.
Mm-hmm.
Where Come in on, the beginning, right? I mean, it's a complete role reversal, and I think just it's a really great way of showing just how she is maturing toward that role that we know she is destined to take on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that to me was, and for the 80s, for if you watch movies from the 80s. Women are treated like shit. Okay. Let's just put that out there. And this Terminator was a little bit different. Aliens also was different. And I'm going mm-hmm. to chalk it up to Gail Ann Hurd's influence and her work on producing these films and making sure that the women who were in these films were portrayed a certain way. And as the badasses that they were human. They had, you know, freakouts and fears, but they stepped up and were ultimately badasses.
Yeah, absolutely.
So that's how I ended, you know. And then I watched the credits because I was like, I was interested to see how many women were in the cast and crew. And I was really surprised to see so many women in the crew. That was something mm-hmm. that even today you don't see as much of. And so I found that really interesting. And I think it would be really cool to one day dream job to interview Gail Ann Hurd and talk to her about making this movie and Aliens.
That would be sweet. Who do we have to email?
Gail, we want to talk to you because we're fangirls. So anyway, Lise, we are now at 30 minutes. Do you have Woo. Any shout outs?
I do. Sweet. So My manuscript is out to beta readers, which means I finally have time to do other things than work on polishing that bad boy. So I finally, this book I've had overdue from the library for a little bit, don't tell anyone. I finally got to read Rebecca Roanhorse's Storm of Locusts, the sequel to Trail of Lightning that we discussed actually not that long ago. And it was really, really good. I really, really enjoyed it. So often that second novel can be in a series can be a bit of a letdown. But this one picks right up where the other one left off. It advances a lot of the central themes from the first novel, but also starts picking up new themes of, you know, redemption and redemption after deep corruption. So that was very cool to see. And of course, you know, it's a dystopian future after an apocalypse. It is all shades of gray, which, you know, we love. And Maggie is as much of an anti-hero as ever. So yeah, no, it's a fabulous read and you should definitely check it out.
I really dig anti-heroes. And Maggie really kind of like gets that. She like nails that. That character is just for me. So I'm looking forward to reading it. I haven't yet. Oh my God. But not like I haven't had other stuff to read and things like that. So my shout out, and you and I were talking about this earlier, was, y'all, I finally decided, I was like back and forth on this. I decided to start watching the Amazon Prime series Hunters. And the basic overview of this is that it's a group of Jews who survived the Holocaust. It's in the 70s, the early 70s, and they're literally hunting down Nazis who left Germany and were brought into the United States, which is a pretty big no-no. And so these folks are basically living as, you know, the guy next door, you know, like that, which is like horrifying because these are people who literally are the literal Third Reich Nazis. And there's a subplot going on that these Nazis are organizing and they're bringing in younger people to like create the Fourth Reich. So, you know, creepy and gross. And I wasn't sure I was going to like it. It takes place in the 70s again. The filming, the cinematography is amazing. And again, that they really captured the gritty, icky feel of the 70s. There is queer rep in it. So, you know, a little bit of that. And I got interested. I told Lise this. I got sort of interested in, like, is this actually a thing? I mean, was the U.S. government actually bringing in Nazis? And dun dun dun, there is a book out. A man named Eric Lichtblau. He is a journalist, and he wrote a book called "The Nazis Next Door: How America Became a Safe Haven for Hitler's Men." So I'm reading that book and watching Hunters and getting a much bigger picture of what happened in those couple of decades after World War II ended. And if you think about it, the 70s. You know, that's only 30 years after the war ended. And there were lots of people who survived the Holocaust and they came to America too.
Right.
So it's really, I mean, I'm going to tell y'all, it's gritty, it's violent. So it's probably not appropriate for young kids. But if you're, you know, if you're not a young kid and you want something really kind of interesting and creepy and horrifying to watch, that may be a reflection of larger currents now, Hunters is proving to be something that I'm actually glad I started watching. And I was going to skip it because I was just like, oh, I don't know if I can deal with more Nazis. But I'm actually glad that I started watching this. And De Niro is amazing. Or no, it's Pacino, I think. Unrecognizable. As a Jew who survived the Holocaust. It's really, really amazing. So anyway, that's my shout out. Well done, Hunters. And I think that's about it for us. Lise, did you just step away to go let kitties out?
I had to let a cat in, yes. Who now wants out.
Okay.
But she's going to have to wait just a second.
I know.
This is okay. Allie, our other cat. I don't know if you've ever met her.
I haven't met her.
She's
Allie.
The little black cat right there.
Oh, it's so cute. Cat moment, y'all. All right.
She's our old lady.
Aw, that's so cute. All right, Lee, so that about does it for me. Do you have anything to add?
No, I'm just looking forward to giving this treatment to Terminator 2.
Yeah, that we need to do that one too. I need to rewatch it. You know, I've seen that one like 5,000 times.
Yeah, me too. I saw that one in the theaters, so that was...
Same.
That one has a place in my heart.
I've seen, like, all the Terminators in the theaters, actually. But, oh, except well, not...
Six was a little young for me to be watching
true.
The first
I haven't,
one.
So. I did not see Dark Fate in the theaters, and I just saw that one. And that one's really interesting. I'll be interested to hear your thoughts on it when you see it. So, all right, friends, that wraps it up. We are Les Geek Out. I am Andy Marquette. That over there is Lise McTague. We talked about the movie Terminator, and you can find it just about anywhere. I watched it. I think I watched it on Prime or Netflix. It's available in all the places. 1984. Yes. give it a whirl. I think you'll find it enjoyable if you haven't seen it yet. And as Lise was saying, it does have kind of a horror movie vibe, too.
Oh, yeah. Death the End, especially, is like right out of... almost any horror movie you can find. It has that crescendo, that horror movie crescendo to it.
Yeah, the storm's coming, you know, that mm-hmm. kind of crescendo to it. But that was kind of typical of Cameron and Hurd, because Aliens is sort of a spec fic yep. horror, you know, very menacing kind of feel underlying the movies and the scripts and the characters. And let's see, you can find us on Twitter at LGO Podcast. And you can find us on our website at lesgeekoutcast.com and all the platforms, all the places. That's where we are. If you like this stuff, give us a shout out and like and subscribe, and we'd really appreciate that. And if you have any story ideas or things you'd like us to cover, hit us up on Twitter. Boom. All right. Thanks, y'all. Have a good couple of weeks.
I think we just immortalized an alley sneeze.
Aww, that's cute though. I am mm-hmm. all for alley sneezes.
She's very sneezy. Her favorite thing to do is to like climb up in your lap and be all cute and then sneeze right in your face.
Aww, that's so cute. Good girl, Allie.
All right, I need to go let her out. She's getting perturbed. I'm gonna stop this.